From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents. Context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
Sunnyvale, California.
Oakland, California.
Oakland, California.
North Oakland.
North Oakland.
North Berkeley.
South Berkeley.
Adams Point.
Yosemite.
Coming up, we witness an online auction in which millions of dollars hang in the balance.
You're waiting, you're hoping there's no disaster.
Then we learn how to create sounds for a world that doesn't exist.
You have to be open to different things and think beyond the specifics of whatever something would literally sound like.
And we visit one of the oldest butcher shops in California.
You can tell by the white chunks with the nice meat that's around it, you know, that looks very delicious.
Sink your teeth into today's episode of Cross Currents. Today, we're peeking behind the scenes of our modern world to see how things get made. And we're going to start with public space. Parks, libraries, roads, and sidewalks. These pieces of city infrastructure are everywhere. But have you ever wondered how they actually came to be? A lot needs to happen to create a park, from coming up with the idea in the first place to environmental reviews, construction, and of course, getting the money to pay for it. Usually, San Francisco does this through a vote, like 2012's Prop B. It gave the city permission to borrow $195 million for park renovations, including Golden Gate Park. But when voters approve these big spending projects, the money doesn't just show up the next day. Mayor Ed Lee doesn't walk down to the nearest bank and ask for a loan. Instead, we make the banks come to us. KALW's Raja Shah has the story.
I'm in a tiny conference room at City Hall in San Francisco, surrounded by city officials, consultants, lawyers, and we're all staring intently at a flat screen on the wall, watching the end of an online auction. An auction in which some of the biggest banks in the world are competing to lend us money.
You're waiting, you're hoping there's no disaster.
That's Nadia Sasse, the city's director of public finance. She's already warned me that these auctions go down to the wire. Bids can come in at the last second. But this one is a little too close for comfort.
There's less than a minute remaining.
Are you kidding me?
So yeah, what's going on now?
Nothing.
Not a single bid has come in.
Oh my God.
All right. What is going on here? Allow me to explain. If you've ever shopped around for a student loan or a mortgage on your house, then you can relate to San Francisco's predicament. When it comes to borrowing money, the city wants a good deal. That means a low interest rate. A tiny difference in the interest rate can have a huge impact on how much you have to pay back, your monthly mortgage payment, for example. But unlike you, the city borrows tens, sometimes hundreds of millions of dollars at a time. Even just the interest payments on some of the city's loans would be enough to buy several houses in San Francisco, even in this market. The banks, they're on the other side of this transaction. The higher the interest rate, the more money they stand to make. So to make sure it's getting the best deal, the cheapest interest rate on its loan, the city puts out a call, essentially asking banks, how low can you go? Give us your best offer.
And so everybody sends in their bids, and you determine which of the bids is the lowest true interest cost.
It's like eBay.
Yeah. Could be. Yes, it is. Yeah.
Nadia Sasse is the one running this glorified eBay auction. And it really is like eBay. It happens online. There's a deadline. And when the clock hits zero, the bank with the lowest bid wins and San Francisco gets its loan. It really is as simple as that. At least, most of the time.
Millions now bracing for this monster nor'easter bearing down just as we come on the air. You can see it right over my shoulder here.
A lot of these big banks, they're based in New York.
States of emergency across seven.
And this past January, when this auction was scheduled, New York was sitting in the path of a blizzard.
Here in New York, commuters jamming into the subways, the trains, and for the first time that anyone can remember, New York City subways closing down for the snowstorm.
I actually got a call from Sasse 2 days before the auction. She was thinking of postponing it. If those bankers in Manhattan couldn't get to their desks, it could affect how many bids we got. On the other hand, if we were the only big city looking for a loan on that stormy day, it could actually help. Less competition.
A variable I hadn't contemplated. We've never had this situation before.
Sasei decided to go ahead with the auction. And so I joined her and her team in that conference room in City Hall to watch it all play out.
So now we have 15 minutes. The clock's ticking.
Today would be an especially bad time for anything to go wrong, because this auction is one of San Francisco's biggest in years. $300 million.
It's sizable.
There's a reason this auction is so huge. Instead of taking out a loan for some new project, say a highway or a hospital, we're actually refinancing a bunch of loans spanning the last decade, because interest rates are historically low. It's just like refinancing the mortgage on your house, if your house is $300 million. But the point is that when this kind of money is involved, getting a good interest rate makes an especially big difference. The question on everyone's mind is, what will that interest rate be?
I'm going to go 2.25.
Oh.
Yes.
Okay.
Sasei's guess, 2.25%.
You said 2.30. You said 2.35.
Price is right rolls, and then the lowest can just bid a penny.
That's Vishal Trivedi, an analyst on Sasei's team.
So, what do you think?
Slightly pessimistic. I'm going to say 2.36.
In case you missed that, Trivedi's guess is 0.11% higher than Sasei's. That's what gets you branded as a pessimist in this crowd. But here, 0.11% translates to more than $1 million of taxpayer money. And that's why we're having this auction, to squeeze the very best deal out of these giant banks. But the whole plan, it falls apart if nobody actually sends in a bid. Which brings us back to the final countdown.
There's less than a minute remaining.
Are you kidding me?
54 seconds to go.
Finally.
Oh, we got one.
We just got one bid.
Oh, it's less than 30 seconds now.
Oh, four. Thank God.
10 seconds. And as the clock hits zero, after all the drama, six bids came in literally at the last minute.
It's done. So refresh one more time and then we'll go to the results.
And the winning bid was about in line with the team's predictions, 2.34%. The winning bidder, J.P. Morgan.
Good morning.
Good morning. This is Nadia Sasei with the City and County of San Francisco. I'm sure you already know the results. Would like to congratulate you and thank you for a competitive bid.
Thank you very much.
As for what refinancing these loans at this new interest rate means for the city, Vishal Trivedi, the slightly pessimistic analyst, announces the results.
We saved $47 million.
Oh my God! God, that's like higher than we thought.
Yeah.
Oh my God, that's exciting.
$47 million. That's how much will go back into city coffers because of this auction. And to be clear, underneath this whole process is a lot of complexity. Between the end of the auction and arriving at that $47 million number, a room full of analysts were typing away furiously on their laptops for an hour, crunching numbers. But for Sasei, apart from the math, economics, finance, this auction is part of a bigger picture.
We fund libraries, parks, and you get to see what you were part of.
Building those libraries and parks, it's a long and complicated process. But at the start of it is a small group of people in a tiny conference room on the third floor of City Hall, hitting the refresh button on a computer and watching the clock. In San Francisco, I'm Raja Shah for Cross Currents.
Listening to Cross Currents from KALW News, I'm Hanat Baba. And now we'll go from auctions to action. When we're watching a movie or checking out our favorite TV show, we're very aware of what we're seeing on the screen. But what you hear going on in those scenes is just as important, and some would argue even more important than what you see. Take the world of animation, for instance. The Bay Area is home to one of the world's most famous animated film production companies, Pixar. From their current hit, Inside Out.
Do you ever look at someone and wonder, what is going on inside their head?
Ahem. Uh-oh, she's looking at us.
What did she say?
To modern classics like Toy Story.
I am Buzz Lightyear. I come in peace.
You are a child's plaything!
They've taken audiences into many different worlds.
Hey, Mr. Grumpy Gills.
When life gets you down, you know what you gotta do?
I don't wanna know what you gotta do.
Just keep swimming, just keep swimming, just keep swimming, swimming, swimming.
But the worlds they create depend greatly on the sounds that exist there. For that step, Pixar sends their films to Skywalker Ranch in Marin. KALW reporters Seth Samuel and Alyssa Kapnick Samuel went there to see what it means to make an imagined world come alive.
This is a clip from Pixar's Monsters University.
Wait, 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 wait. Let's pause just for a second and explain a little bit of what's going on here.
Yeah, I agree. So first of all, Monsters University tells a story about monsters attending a university for monsters.
And a particularly nerdy monster, Mike Wazowski, wants to be accepted by the cooler students at school. So he and his friends take on an athletic challenge.
The toxicity challenge. And one part of it is running as fast as they can, while other monsters throw what are called glow urchins at them. They're a sort of spiky jellyfish.
When a glow urchin hits a monster, his skin instantly swells into a comically giant wound.
Okay, so let's hear that scene again. What you're hearing are the monsters getting hit by glow urchins as they race each other.
The great thing about animation is that there's no sound to begin with. That's very freeing in that it's all built from the ground up.
Tom Myers is one of the designers behind all of the sounds you just heard in that clip.
We met up with him at his office, a tiny studio in a corner of the sprawling Skywalker Ranch up in Marin.
Oh, man, I can't believe we're here. Is that an Oscar?
That is not an Oscar. That is it's actually C-3PO.
I am C-3PO, human-cyborg relations.
When you're here at this company for 20-plus years, and I've been here over 20 years, they give you one of those.
Tom Myers might not have an Oscar yet, but he's been nominated 3 times and has worked on over 70 films.
In his studio, there's a pretty large movie screen, speakers, and a single microphone. Tom's also got a computer and an old analog synthesizer called a synclavier.
That's a combination of a couple of throat singers, or actually one throat singer performing in a couple of different ways. So I go and record something, and then I will sample it into the synclavier. You can virtually sample anything into it.
As he creates and manipulates sound for each scene, the film projects onto the movie screen.
When you watch the scene for the first time, what do you do first?
Cry openly, weep openly. No, you look at it and go, oh my God, how will we ever get to a spot where we have it all together? But so your mind starts to think about certain things. Well, what will that sound like? And how should that work together? And how do we make each sound distinctive? Because they all happen very fast.
So back to that clip from Monsters University, Tom and his team had to create sounds for most of that. Everything but the voices and the sounds that the Foley artists make.
Like footsteps or opening and closing doors.
For everything else, the team has to invent the sounds of that world. In this scene, the sounds have to get across both the danger and the comedy of what's happening.
Wow. Oh my gosh.
This last character who gets hit, he gets hit 3 times and expands, and then they shoot one into his mouth and his whole body expands. So obviously that one needs to be sort of bigger and needs to be kind of the payoff, the fattest, body inflation. So you try and vary the frequency so you can build a rhythm and kind of reach a climax with it.
And the sound has to change throughout the scene. Otherwise, it wouldn't seem realistic and it would bore the audience.
It flies in, it stings, and then there's an inflation. So there are 3 aspects to each one of those things that come in, and there are hundreds of them that fly by. So you have to figure out, well, how do we get that idea of 1, 2, 3 across? And then with so many different ones, how do you do it so it doesn't just become you know, a mess of sound.
Could you tell us specifically how you made the glow urchin flying through the air and hitting a body?
Okay.
What are we actually hearing?
Let's see. Well, the by is a tone, sort of a synthesized tone that I put through a Doppler program. Pitched it down a little bit. I think I added a little sort of bacon frying with it to give it some texture.
And this isn't a fancy industry term.
It's literally the sound of bacon in a pan.
To give it that kind of sizzly texture.
And beyond the pitched up tone and the bacon frying, there's also the sound of two Hot Wheels cars banging into each other.
We don't have that original recording, but this is what we think it might sound like.
And at one point, they used the sound of someone hitting a giant empty water bottle. So why, you may ask, do they go to all this trouble? Why not just throw something urchin-like through the air and record that?
Tom says it gets tricky to record in the real world because you can't necessarily control that sound. In order to explain this to us, he tells us a story that's infamous at Skywalker Ranch.
Randy Tom, who's the director of sound design at Skywalker, once went to collect sounds from a nuclear facility.
And it didn't really work out, or it was very sort of diffuse and mushy, and the sound was not what he expected it to be. But as he was leaving, there was a water cooler that had a specific kind of hum and bloop when he went by it.
So he recorded that, the sound of the water cooler blooping. And that's what he ended up using to represent the nuclear facility.
Celebrated sound designer Walter Murch once said, sound kind of sneaks in the side door. The design doesn't have to knock you over. It's there to enhance your experience, to keep you inside the story and the moment.
The emotional component is at least as important as the literal component. You have to be open to different things and think beyond the specifics of whatever something would literally sound like, because oftentimes that's not the most interesting or the most dramatic.
For example, there's a scene toward the end of Monsters University where Mike Wazowski, that nerdy monster, has to roar. It's got to be a really particular kind of roar, too, because Mike's a pretty little guy.
It had to be good but not great. I actually did use the vocal. I did use sort of my own vocal and pitched it, so it had some body. It's big and scary, but not quite so big and scary.
Tom had to hit just the right balance so that the audience would believe that that roar came out of a monster's mouth instead of his own.
In a way, that's what he's doing through the entire film. And it's the ultimate test of a good sound designer. To make an animated world exist, Tom has to make the audience forget that he does.
Oh my gosh, what was that?
Let's get out of here. Cross, Chris, I'm a Lucy Captain!
Alex, it's Samuel!
Seth and Alyssa are fine. This is Cross Currents. I'm Hanat Baba. From the nitty-gritty of City Hall borrowing to the secret sauce behind Pixar's biggest hits, today's show has been all about pulling back the curtain to see how the sausage gets made. So we thought we'd talk to somebody who can actually tell us how the sausage gets made. Drew's Meats, soon to be known as E&J in San Francisco, is one of the oldest butcher shops in all of California. It's been at its current location on Church Street in Noe Valley since 1889. We sent KLW's Raja Shah there on a mission to get the scoop on sausage.
Sausage, it's ground up meat. All right. It looks like a big fat meat. That's in a tube. My name is Joseph Napier. I'm the butcher. Not too many places make their own sausage these days. We're going to make garlic sausage. We'll have a little sections of your seasoning already in little bowls. Grind some pork up. And you put it in together and you mix it by hand.
And we got garlic. Fresh garlic.
Best advice I can give you. Always make sure you have your list what you need so you don't forget. My memory is not that great. I'm getting kind of old.
That's perfect.
It's about 10 pounds. Our basic piece of meat that we usually use is pork shoulder. It's also known as Boston butt, pork butt, different names, very same thing. Now, guess what we get to do?
That's the grinder.
We get pushing down the meat down into the shaft, and it's coming out of the holes. Oh yeah. And it smells really good. Now we gotta add the special ingredient.
What's that?
Wine. So we just add a cup of wine.
That's look like about a cup.
So now all we have to do now is get ready to case it. And just don't go too fast. If you go too fast, you end up putting too much meat in the casing and it'll burst. You can tell by the white chunks with the nice meat that's around it, you know, that looks very delicious. The one thing about being a small butcher shop is that you know the people around here.
Everything good? All right.
That's what I'm here for. I'm trying to make sure they have something really great.
There you go.
Something to remember.
Thank you very much.
That's it. That's sausage.
Have a great day.
Whether you're a carnivore, herbivore, or omnivore, we'd love to hear your feedback. Email us at news@kalw.org or find us on Facebook and Twitter at KALW. Because of you, we can proudly say we're listener-supported public radio. Our team includes Lisa Bartfy, Audrey Dilling, Angela Johnston, Casey Miner, Ted Muldoon, Emma Nobel, Jessica Plachik, Seth Samuel, Stephen Short, and Todd Whitney. Today's show was engineered by Chris Hoff, produced by Raja Shah. The line producer was Nina Gensler-Debs. Our managing editor is Jen Chien. Managing producer is Julie Kane. Ben Trefney is our news director. Our theme music is by the John Santos Quintet. This music is by The Session. The band's two founding members originally met in Ghana and are now based here in San Francisco. And they've got a show on Friday at the Great American Music Hall in the city. Doors open at 8 o'clock. For Cross Currents, I'm Hannah Baba.